We're joined right now and very happy to have this gentleman join us. He's an outstanding talk show host, very popular in the Bay Area. He's from the Game 95.7. Guy Haberman joins us on the Corky's Hotline on the Mighty 1090. Guy, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on, and I'm glad to hear you're having Jim Tsai on. He's a great man.
Yeah, Jimmy's a great guy, and we go back to when he was coaching at UCLA with Lavin, so we figured he'd be a good guy to have on and talk a little bit about what Steve likes to do as a coach.
Absolutely. I know him from his days in Fresno, at Fresno Pacific University.
Boy, he had a nice run up there. I think he went like 62-10 or something.
He did. He dominated.
Hey, let's talk about the A's. Do we need a new program to be able to tell who the players are this year?
You do. I remember I was there, I think, the first week after pitchers and catchers reported. It's been a week there in Arizona. And Tyler Clippard, who's one of the new guys, who was traded for one of the new guys, mind you, he said he knew like one or two guys, and he was trying to figure it out. And, you know, it's not just that everyone is new. I shouldn't say everyone, but a lot of guys are new. A lot of guys aren't necessarily guys that, you know, it's not like you traded Josh Donaldson for another MVP candidate, at least in years past, Brett Laurie. So guys getting to know each other. I think fans will eventually get to know guys that maybe they haven't seen that much before. You've got some names, certainly Ike Davis, Billy Butler, that are household names, at least to some level. But the pitching staff behind Kazmir and Gray is going to be an interesting thing to see.
Who are some of the guys vying for the 3, 4, 5 spots?
Jesse Hahn is the guy they really want. And I know you know him well.
Yep.
I think he's traded for Derek Norris, obviously. They love him. They think his stuff's electric. They think they have their number three starter in him. Certainly they hope that. If there's been one thing consistent about Billy Bean, these last few years especially, he always seems to have twice or at least nearly as many pitchers as he would need for rotation. You need 5 guys, he likes to have 9, right? And he likes the back end, and we saw this last year, for those guys to rotate through. But I think he feels like, and they feel like, Jesse Hahn is more than just a guy that will rotate through. They hope that he's able to separate himself and be that third starter for them.
How's the left-hander Sean Doolittle doing, their outstanding reliever? I know he had an elbow tear.
Yeah, his shoulder. The rotator.
Oh, shoulder, okay.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a scary deal. They say that he's coming along fine. He's supposed to throw next week. We talked to him a little bit at spring, and, you know, it's one of these deals where, and you always hear this about guys, like, and this is not what Sean said, but you hear about guys all the time. I heard it today about maybe Angel Pagan or somebody, right? Well, he expects to be ready by opening day, as if he's a doctor. You know, these guys have made a living of powering through things and you know, not being able, not allowing anything to stand in their way. Sean's a really bright guy. He's a smart guy. And what's odd about this thing, at least what's I think probably frustrating about it, was he didn't discover it until into the offseason when it was time for him to start up that throwing program again. He started to throw, and he couldn't throw the ball 90 feet. He couldn't throw the ball from second to first. So they decided surgery was not going to be the way to go. They feel like it's going to heal on its own because the tear was small enough. But you just, you know, it's one of those deals with a pitcher shoulder. They say he's going to, as I said, throw next week, but I hope for the best for him. I just don't know what to believe until we see him back out there playing.
Guy Haberman joining us from the Bay Area. He's an outstanding talk show host on the Game 95.7. He covers the Giants and the Oakland Athletics. Tell us a little bit about Derek Norris. What should us Padre fans expect out of this catcher that was an all-star a year ago for Oakland?
Well, the one thing I've said, and I don't know if this is on a scouting report, but if a brawl ever broke out, I'd want Derek Norris to the front of it.
Hey, that's good to know.
Yeah, it's a good attitude that you want out of a catcher. So that was the first thing. The second thing is the pitchers really like working with him in Oakland. And then the third thing is he is, particularly for a young guy, I think he thinks through the game both as a hitter and a pitcher, excuse me, and a catcher, as well as anybody I've seen. His ability to, in some ways, predict what will happen, or at least what he thinks will happen with good reason. And again, that's a prerequisite for catchers, but he does it so, so well. And I'd asked him about it a couple times. He has one of the lowest swing rates on the first pitch of an at-bat. and he knows it. I said to him one time, you know, you've got to swing less than anybody at a first pitch. He said, well, I do. At that point in time, I think maybe it was 2 months into the season, he said, I think I'm first or second in the league. Like, he was aware of the fact that, and he does it by design, but it doesn't mean he doesn't swing at all. He just will swing at a first pitch when he either A, knows what's coming, or B, it's a fastball down the middle. And I remember seeing him against CC Sabathia a couple years ago, first pitch curveball CC threw him, and Derek hit it out like he knew it was coming, and in part because I think that's what he was looking for.
Where do you think the A's rank in this division? I mean, you got the Angels who won 98 games a year ago. A lot of people right now are touting Seattle, and I think that's probably a fair assessment. They've really done a lot offensively the last couple of years to beef up that roster. They got one of the best pitchers in baseball in Felix Hernandez. What should be expected out of the A's this year?
I think a lot's expected because a lot gets expected of Billy Beane. And the expectation is that, you know, coming into 2012, it looked like they had gutted the team. They had traded. They had acquired one of the big trade that year was they acquired Josh Reddick before that season. And, of course, they won the division on the last day of the year. So I think that's fresh with a lot of people. I think certainly there is an understanding that he cleaned house to some degree, but I also think people have in some ways come to terms with maybe he got some good stuff back because that's generally what you see. I think Ben Zobrist is going to be a really nice piece for them, a really nice piece. By the end of the year, they found a way to trade away Cespedes, and even though the offense struggled, they still kept it together long enough to make the playoffs. I like the Mariners, too. I've liked the Mariners for a couple of years, though, so I'm still kind of waiting for them to put it together, and perhaps this is the year. The one thing I said about the A's last year going into the season, and I think that it applies this year, Coach, is that they – won't get outpitched on a given day, 1-5. Maybe Felix will beat Sonny Gray on a given day. Maybe Garrett Richards, when he's right, will beat Kazmir on a given day. Maybe they'll both get beat. But the one thing they did really well was there wasn't really going to be, if your third starter lined up with their third starter or your fifth starter lined up with their fifth, there wasn't really going to be a really soft spot in the rotation. And that kept them in a lot of games. They got a lot of attention for scoring all the runs that they did, but I think their ability to pick off the flag when a guy got hurt in the rotation, Drew Pomeranz punched a chair or something early in the year, broke his hand, and he couldn't get back in the rotation because they replaced him so quickly internally. So I think that ability to be able to day-to-day, 162, to pitch with everybody else, I think will keep them around. The question is, if they make the playoffs, no, they've got John Lester because – what works over 162 doesn't necessarily work over one game or five games or seven games. That's when you need the elite horses. And that was the thinking there. So I think they're built for 162. I think they'll be right there.
Guy Haberman joining us on the Corky's Hotline here on the Mighty 1090. Final question on the A's because I want to get to the Giants a little bit. I've known Billy Beane since he was 17 years of age. We actually played together before he signed with the New York Mets on a summer league team. He hit third, I hit fourth, and he was a great teammate. He's had a great run as the general manager of the Oakland Athletics. My question, people in baseball love Billy. How is he perceived by the fan base up there?
They love him because they believe he's the best there is, but they are not afraid to – last year was the example. I mean, they felt like he overthought it. They felt like he overthought it or ignored chemistry or whatever the case was. There were various opinions. Number one was he overthought it or he ignored the chemistry and what Cespedes' value was when he traded him away for John Lester. I was one that liked the deal because I'd watched them every day for a number of years and felt like they needed a frontline starter, that they did not have a good enough pitcher to guarantee that you could just go out and win, you know, do what Madison Bumgarner did essentially. And Madison Bumgarner was John Lester. I mean, he did what John Lester had already done. So they got the guy. He got the guy. That's the prototypical guy for that. And it didn't work. It failed. You can't debate that. So I think they live and die with it. They realize that part of what he does is a necessary evil of what they are. I think sometimes it's maybe one of these deals where you know how it goes. I can yell at my brother, but you can't yell at him. They get very upset with him, but they understand he's one of the best in the game.
The San Francisco Giants, how's their rotation shaping up in the spring?
Can Bumgarner pitch five times over? I mean, Tim Lincecum's got a sore neck. Ryan Vogelsong wasn't signed to be in the rotation. Tim Hudson's still trying to get back. It's Bumgarner, and then Peavy, who was good as a Giant after he came over in the deal with the Red Sox. I think there's a ton of question marks. There are a ton of question marks. If it's not for Madison Bumgarner, they don't win the World Series last year. And the question is which Jake Peavy was the real Jake Peavy last year? Maybe it's somewhere in the middle. Maybe if it's the Giants Jake Peavy, then phenomenal. That's awesome. Matt Cain is going to be back, but he's had a couple surgeries. And I talked to him the first week of spring training, and he said, "Hey, look, I think I'm going to be okay. I think the elbow's good to go. It feels good, although it gets cranky from time to time." Cranky was the word we heard last year before they shut him down. But he said, "I think I'm going to be good." But hey, and he had this realistic perspective. He said, "Look, I sometimes stuff happens and you can't prevent it, so I'm just going to go out and pitch." So there are major, major, major questions about that rotation now, aside from Madison Bumgarner.
Hey, Guy, what did you make a couple of weeks ago of Pablo Sandoval popping off and saying that he felt disrespected and that the only guys he liked on that ball club were, Hunter Pence and Bruce Bochy? Yeah. What was that all about?
Well, a couple things. I around this time last year, when it was clear he was, obviously he was coming in the last year of his deal, they offered him 3 years, $40 million, which was an insulting offer because they knew he was not going to sign that deal. They absolutely knew he would not sign a 3-year, $40 million deal because all it would take for him would be to have an average year. And he would make more than 3 years, $40 million, just based on the way guys get paid these days. So even though I think he's been a little sensitive to it, I don't know that his agent handled it entirely the right way. I don't blame him for that. I mean, I know a lot of people get bent out of shape when you say an athlete's offended by a $40 million offer. We should all be so lucky to be offended by a $40 million offer. And that's true. But there is a relativity to it that I'm willing to grant, just like in my job or your job, there might be an offer to you or to me that I would think is insulting and someone else making less money isn't, or someone who's making a lot more money than me, I would consider what they turned down to be. So my point being, in the context of what he does for a living, the $40 million offer was well below market value, particularly after they just gave Hunter Pence 5 for $90, and everybody knew it. So I think some of it started there. They were on him a lot about his weight, constantly on him about his weight to get him in shape. And he took a lot of flack around the Bay Area for his weight, openly. The organization talked about his weight, openly. The fans talked about his weight constantly. So he heard about it a lot, for better or worse. And I think people were right to talk about his weight, but it doesn't change the fact that he heard it, and it probably hurt him. And then the other part of it, I talked to someone within the organization about a month ago, and they felt like he got enamored over time with being a star more so than maybe being the guy that he was when he came up in terms of just always being fun-loving. I don't know, clearly from what he said, that he totally fit into that clubhouse based on his words. That's okay. The guy raked when it mattered. But I think a lot of it stemmed from the $40 million offer. I mean, you've been in locker rooms. Not everybody likes everybody. I mean, right. There are guys in that clubhouse right now that don't like each other. That's just the way it goes. So that didn't bug me so much. It was interesting to hear him say it out loud, because I think guys over time had his back. But I don't know, just having been in the clubhouse, I don't know that there were too many guys shedding a tear over finding out that they weren't his best friend either.
Well, merchandise sales are going to go down. They're not going to continue to sell the panda hats, that's for sure.
I know. I don't know what they're going to do. It's a crisis. What are they going to do with all this stuff?
When
a team loses a championship, they got to send all that stuff somewhere else. I don't know what
they're going to do. Ship it to Boston. Larry Lucchino will put the bill on that.
Yeah.
Hey, your thoughts on Bruce Bochy? He had the little heart scare. He ended up having a couple of stents put in. I saw Boch walking to the mound the other day. He looked good. Looked like he hasn't missed a beat.
Yeah, what's funny is, it must have been like I think that happened at the end of a week, maybe on a Thursday or a Friday.
Yeah, it was a Thursday.
It was a Thursday, and I talked to him in his office the following Thursday, so it's been about a week. And he was still about a week or two away from being able to run and do all the things that he normally did.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started to ask him about his health, he kind of took off his hat, started rubbing his forehead. He was already tired. He was already tired of talking about it. But we eventually got to some other things, and I don't know how the conversation got here, but I asked him if there was a bar fight, who would be the three guys from his club he'd want to fight, right? And he said Madison Bumgarner won, Hunter Pence too, and he gave reasons. I mean, he was really eloquent. He said, "Well, I'd want Mad Bum leading off," and he said Sergio Romo because he's a scrapper. And the follow up was something about, "Wow, you know, that's a heck of a lineup." And he said, "Now don't count me out either. I got something left in me too. I could still." So I think he's feeling pretty good.
That's great. You know, Bumgarner, people said he just has tremendous country strength.
He does. He does. They took a picture of him with an ox out at spring training for, a calendar or something. But he's remarkable. I remember seeing him in AAA. I was doing the AAA team. I was doing their games on radio a little bit. And he and Bumgarner, he and Posey, are great friends. Once or twice, I catch them wrestling in the outfield before a start. Posey's got a little more personality than I think he lets on publicly. And Madison Bumgarner, I think we've seen this offseason, has really, not that he was very much in a shell before, but did he certainly come out of it. And, you know, he thinks he's the best hitter on the team. He's an impressive athlete. There's no question.
Well, I tell you, that was the most impressive postseason performance I've ever seen, is what he pulled off last year.
You and me and everybody else, I couldn't believe it, you know. And of course, he said afterwards he had, however, countless innings left in him. I don't think he could believe it. I don't think the Royals could believe it. I think they got to Game 7 and felt like, all right, we've dodged this bullet. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, and I believe him when he says he could have gone more.
I don't think we'll ever see a type of performance like that. I mean, we may see a guy that throws as many innings, but not to be as effective as he was. I mean, that was just beyond belief.
It's basketball. It's what happens in basketball. You know, nobody, particularly non-hitters, don't carry teams like that because you don't get the ball in your hands like you do as a quarterback or as a point guard. You don't carry a team, maybe through a game, maybe a series, but not through an entire postseason. It doesn't happen. It's one thing to happen in basketball. If a guy, you know, if all of a sudden Russell Westbrook flips the switch and he carries OKC to the finals, it'd be amazing, but no one would say, well, no, that's never happened before. No one does that in the sport. That's what's remarkable. The sport is not set up for that.
That's for sure. Hey, one last question. I want to go back to the A's. How's Barry Zito doing in his comeback attempt after signing a minor league contract?
You know, he's picked up a few miles per hour. I think he's throwing 86, 87, 88. His last year with the Giants, he was 82, 83. They say that, you know, the curveball, the changeup is supposed to be great. I talked to Sonny Gray about his curveball. He said he'd never seen anything like it in person. He said he was playing catch with a guy. He and Barry were standing next to each other. They were each throwing, right? And he said the guy who was playing catch with Barry broke off two curveballs, went through the guy's legs twice.
Huh.
He's never seen anything like it. I don't think, though, that he's going to make this 25-man roster. There is some belief that he will make a 25-man roster somewhere. You know, I'll be interested if, let's say, a non-contender Minnesota, you know, if the Angels want him or the Padres want him, that'd be one thing. I'd be interested if Minnesota wanted him or something like that, whether or not he would be interested in it. But there's a growing belief that he's showing enough to be on somebody's 25-man roster. I think at this point it's a pretty long shot that it would be with the A's if it happens.
Well, you know, I'm pulling for him because even though he didn't pitch anywhere near with the Giants and living up to that contract, he always took the ball every fifth day and always seemed to go out there and do whatever he could to try to help the ball club win. And, I mean, he really attacked it as a pro.
He did. He was a consummate professional. And you know what was great to see for him was when it was all said and done, they couldn't have won their World Series in 12 without him.
That's right.
I mean, he had a couple big starts. He had a huge start in St. Louis. I think he went 8 innings. And so, you know, when it was all said and done, I don't think they would have undone the deal.
And, you know, I think they made a lot of money because they ended up winning that World Series, and they wouldn't have won it if he didn't have those big outings, no question about it. Hey, I'm sorry that you don't have enough to talk about right now in the Bay Area with, you know, the Raiders and the stadium. Of course, we're doing a lot of stadium talk down here. You got an unbelievable offseason with the 49ers, mostly on the wrong side, I would imagine. And then you got baseball, and you got the NCAA tournament. Boy, you guys not hurting for material up on there on your show.
No, we're not. And the Golden State Warriors have the best record in basketball. So
yeah, they got maybe the best shooting backcourt in the history of the game.
Yeah, yep.
Hey, Guy, thanks for so much time tonight. Appreciate it.
A pleasure, anytime.
You take care. Guy Haberman, talk show host from The Game in the Bay Area on 95.7. We appreciate him stopping by the Corky's Hotline.